right. Coming up on KBOO this afternoon, we have... at 10, it will be Air Cascadia with Chris Andre. News, views, and interviews. Commentary and a bunch of jiggery pokery. At 10:15, we'll hear Flashpoints, investigative news journalism with our host, Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, it's Between the Covers. We'll hear a piece from the series Book Waves with host Richard Walensky. And we'll talk about the recently departed Umberto Eco, leading semiologist and novelist and the author of the best-selling book, Name of the Rose. And at 11:30, we'll hear Black Book Talk with our host, Patricia Welch, a monthly program featuring interviews and discussions of works by African-American authors. Thank you so much, KBOO members, for your ongoing support. As always, you can go to www.kboo.fm and become a member today if you are not already a member. The time is 10 o'clock. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Up next, Air Cascadia. Portland, up next, Air Cascadia.
Tune in to KBOO on Tuesday to mark KBOO from midnight to midnight as we celebrate International Women's Day. Double 24 hours of programming produced, hosted, and engineered by women. There will be live music by women, public affairs over feminist focus, and female DJs focus, all kinds of music to celebrate the creativity, variety, and zeal of the women of the world. Again, that's Tuesday, March 8th. From midnight to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Thursday, March 3rd, 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, real community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. And remember, we're back to the weather again on Air Cascadia. It's important to take note of something outside that screen in front of you or those deadly four walls. Today, there's a chance of showers. Could get a thunderstorm or two. Later on in the day, and with a bit of hail in there too, although the National Weather Service says that it's, other than that, other than being hit by lightning or pummeled by hail, it's going to be mostly a sunny day. Highs near 58, and medium breezy to up to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, more clouds rolling in, lows around 44, wind dropping off, and tomorrow, slight chance of rain later in the day, otherwise overcast with a high near 57. And today, I called Harvey Wasserman and asked him to join us on the show today. Harvey's going to be our featured guest, and here's why. Because of this. Okay, so here's the news story. Indian Point nuclear plant, 25 miles from New York City, home of Donald Trump, I might add, is called a disaster waiting to happen. The recent radioactive leak at Indian Point is prompting renewed calls for the site to be shut down. There's growing concern on all sides about potential damage. That damage is, to put it mildly, of an accident. It's a very densely populated part of the country, and in the past year alone, there have been a number of mishaps at Indian Point. Mishaps, in addition to the fact that it's so hot, it hasn't been really inspected for many years. It's about, I think, 60 years old or so. No inspection whatsoever. Why? Because they can't get near it. So that said, I went beetling around looking for other stories from around the country. And here's what I find. I find radioactive tritium is leaked from 3/4 of U.S. commercial power sites. And I think, yikes. And then I look at the date, and it's September of 2011. Lo and behold, 9/11 happened. We paid no attention, none whatsoever, to the fact that radioactive tritium is leaking from 3/4 of U.S. commercial nuclear power sites. That is indeed a chilling reminder that these places, energy sites, these nuclear reactors are all across the country. None of them. They're all basically the same thing. They're basically the same one that blew in Japan, Fukushima. And we are cheerfully going about our business, yelling, make America great again. Well, we're about to make America a puff of smoke is what we're about to do. The one voice crying in the wilderness and never has stopped right from the get-go, pounding away at that, offering viable alternatives. Harvey Wasserman is our guest today. Good morning, Harvey. Yes, he'll be with us in just a moment. We don't have him on the line right now, but we will shortly. So I want to take you through a little bit more of the news. Just a moment. Apparently, we have to check the number on that. I want to ask our indomitable engineer just to bring up a little bit of music, perhaps, while we check that number again. Should be just a second. And meanwhile, back at the ranch, Fukushima, we ought to revisit that. There are at least three of these stories, all interrelated and all important for us to at least be aware of, even though the general distraction of the public during this election season has taken up most people's attention span, what little there is left of it. There is brewing a methane disaster that pretty much dwarfs many of the effects of a nuclear meltdown. There are methane leaks all across the country right now. They are not dramatic. They're not anything like a disaster at a nuclear plant, but nonetheless, they are there, and very little has been done to address them. The Alisol one in California is nothing compared to methane leaks at other facilities all across the nation. But to return to Indian Point, we're going to be talking about that today. In the past year alone, there have been a number of mishaps at Indian Point, including a power failure in the reactor core, a transformer fire, and an alarm failure. The escape of radiated water into groundwater. That's one hell of a laundry list for one reactor. In the past year, that's a lot. The plant sits about 25 miles north of New York City, as we mentioned. The earlier this month, Enter Energy Corporation, which owns Indian Point, reported increased levels of tritium contaminated water at three monitoring wells, with one well's radioactivity increasing by as much as 65,000%. Get that? One of these testing sites, the radioactivity was as much as 65,000%. Moving right along, the news from Fukushima meltdown's not good. The reactor meltdown on the Daiichi plant should have been announced much sooner, they find. Well, duh. The operator admitted this just this week. How long ago was that, eh? In a statement, the Tokyo Electric Power Company, or TEPCO, said that a public declaration of... do we have Harvey? We do. Oh, good. Well, we've got Harvey Wasserman on the line. We don't have much time left, but we'll make the most of what time we do have. Good morning, Harvey. I'm sorry about that.
Chris, how are you? Always be good with you. It's always good to be with you. Hello.
Hi. Good morning. I hope you can hear me now. If you can, do please.
I can hear you. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Well, I guess we are still waiting a bit. I don't hear.
I'm here. I can hear you. Chris, I can hear you.
But I could...
Hello?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Harvey. Good. Indian Point. We've been talking about this all morning now. I want to turn it over to you because you know a lot more about this than I do, and that's why I wanted to reach out to you and hear what you had to say. Apparently... all the way back in 2011, they found that three-quarters of the nuclear plants around the country were in trouble. So give us an update now of what it is that we are refusing to look at in all of these examples.
Well, all these nuclear power plants are getting older and they are getting more dangerous every day. Nuclear power plants are not accidents waiting to happen. They're accidents in progress. And we have two reactors north of New York City where the governor of the state has been trying for years to get them shut down, and they won't even let him do that. And we have two reactors on earthquake fault in California at Diablo Canyon. Of course, you've got the Columbia Generating Station up there. So all these reactors are essentially falling apart. This is 1950s technology, and the plants are just decrepit, and the owners of them have no liability for a major disaster, so they don't care if they blow up or not, frankly.
Why is it they have no liability? How did that come to pass?
The Price-Anderson Act of 1957 basically said that it shielded them from liability. The nuclear industry would not have come about. Utilities would never have built nuclear plants if they were forced to be exposed to the liability of a major disaster. So in 1957, the Price-Anderson Act said, okay, go ahead and build these reactors. We'll have a small fund, and you won't be personally liable. Your corporations won't be liable. So we have a situation where nuclear power plants are being operated by owners who don't really have any liability if the things blow up. And it's a catastrophic situation.
And some of these reactors actually do date from 1957. I understand that we were talking with others around the country who worked at these places said that it was impossible to really ascertain what was going on because not even robots. There was nothing that could probe down into some of the lower levels and find out exactly what problems were brewing down there because it was simply too hot. And the fact, and it's important to know that because, of course, that these things aren't stable. They recombine and turn into other types of radioactive elements that we have no knowledge of that. How do they? Is it possible to test them? Has the technology evolved into some other form?
No, the technology has actually devolved. The longer these reactors operate, the worse they are. The more dangerous they get. The nuclear power industry has a reverse learning curve. The longer they go, the more dangerous they are. We are now in a situation, Chris, where worldwide more electricity is generated with wind power than with nuclear. Nuclear is going down fast, and we really have to work very hard to close the Columbia Generating Station and the other remaining reactors. Let's put it this way. It almost doesn't have anything to do with nuclear power. If these reactors were a house, you wouldn't live in them. If they were a car, you wouldn't drive them. If they were a ship, you wouldn't get on them. I mean, they are just old, decrepit machines that should not be operating. Nobody's out there driving a 50-year-old car except antique shows. And these reactors, their designs are 50 years old. It's incredible that they're continuing to operate.
I would have expected. What about laws that govern this the life of a nuclear reactor? I understand that there are some restrictions on how long these things are allowed to be operated.
Well, they were supposed to be. Their licenses were supposed to expire after 40 years, and now they're going in there and trying to get extensions. And the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is giving them extensions, and it's insane. It's incredibly irresponsible. So these reactors are continuing to operate after 40 years. Oh, and you know, it's just unconscionable. Like I say, you wouldn't drive a car that was 50 years old unless it was really spruced up for some antique show. And these are not antique shows. And there are whole areas of these reactors where they can't even monitor what's going on. They can't get into them. We've confronted that at Diablo Canyon in California. They can't do the safety tests that really should be required to allow them to continue to operate.
So what would it involve? It sounds like shutting them down would be incredibly difficult and also very dangerous. Do we have any models of successful efforts to shut down one of these very ancient, decrepit reactors? We don't know what's really in there.
Yeah, so we've done a few now. We shut two at San Onofre, in Southern California. We shut the Vermont Yankee is shut now. Pilgrim will shut. There are a number. We've really been rolling them back in the last 2 years, and there's no way that new reactors will be built. There's a four being constructed in